Hello and welcome back to Cannabis Insider. I'm Abby Higginbotham, and while Pato Little is off this week, I am thrilled to be joined by the one and only Javier Hase, the OG Cannabis Insider host. It's great to have you, Javier.
That's why they call me Slim Shady.
He's doing? Never leaving. He's always going to be here at some point on the show.
So. Oh yeah, we have a lot of surprises for you this year, special segments coming up. A lot more will be going on Cannabis Insider in 2024. So stay tuned. Follow us on socials, BC Cannabis on every social network, benzinga.com/cannabis for your daily dose of cannabis news, and bccannabis.com. We're coming back to Florida on April 16th and 17th to the Diplomat in Hollywood, Florida for another, the 18th edition of the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference. Exciting stuff going on. Can't miss. Abby, how are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm also excited about our interview today. I worked in influencer marketing, so kind of talking about cannabis involving influencers is a world I haven't like really delved into. So I'm looking forward to it. How are you?
It's fundamental. I think influencers are a key thing in cannabis, especially since you can't advertise on most platforms. We know that X changed their a policy around cannabis advertising a little bit and, last year, but overall it's one of the most important and most effective tools that out there. And also the job of managing influencers and managing influencer relations is one that is super tough and often underestimated, often misunderstood in terms of what it takes to get these people together, to wrangle them, to have them, turn things in time, what the client was expecting. So we'll have a very interesting conversation around that.
But wait, first, we're going to get into the top headlines of cannabis news today. So here in my home state of Missouri, the courts are stepping up. They're currently tackling a massive backlog of old marijuana charges and have now put in for an extra $3.7 million to help clear them up. It's all part of getting our legal system in sync with the new cannabis laws. It's a pretty significant move for Missouri, and it's kind of showing that we're keeping up with the changes and making sure past laws don't hold people back. Shifting from the legal landscape in Missouri, there's some fascinating news in the medical world. A new clinical study by a German psychiatric hospital has revealed that the medical marijuana shows promise in treating chronic depression. The study is a big deal as it adds substantial weight to the conversation about medical benefits of marijuana. It's groundbreaking in understanding how marijuana can be used in a therapeutic way, especially for conditions like depression that affect so many people. Jumping from that fascinating study, let's head over to Kentucky. There's some interesting legislation happening there. A new bill is looking to set a THC limit for DUIs, which is really stirring up some conversation, especially with the current buzz around decriminalizing weed in the state. It's a tricky balance between safety and changing attitudes towards cannabis. For all the deep dives on these stories, though, and the latest in cannabis news, make sure to check out benzinga.com. All right, though, let's jump back into our interview. So speaking of our guests today, we're thrilled to welcome a special guest who is a true game changer in the world of influencer marketing. She's brain behind Influencer Nexus, revolutionizing how brands connect with their audience through social media. So please join me in welcoming Sarah Safari. Sarah, we're so excited to have you today. How are you doing?
I'm doing phenomenal. How are you?
Good, good. Are you fine if we just dive right into it?
Let's go.
Right. Let's just start with the backstory. So can you kind of tell us the backstory of Influencer Nexus and kind of how did cannabis become a part of your influencer marketing world?
Yeah, so I'll tell you the really quick backstory as to how I even got into influencer marketing in the first place, and then we'll kind of go from there. So it was actually kind of a bit of a seamless transition. So before I was doing Influencer Nexus, I was actually working with influencers directly. So they were either influencers or want to be influencers who were either starting their own coaching business or partnering with brands. So I was doing that for about half a decade, helping a lot of different influencers. There's actually many of them were on the fitness influencer side of things, just because that was the area that I was in at the time. And during that period of time and seeing influencers partnering with brands and helping them with the process, I noticed a lot of issues across influencer marketing with standardization and fraudulent influencer marketing and all these different things. And after that point, I decided to make that transition to kind of go onto the other side of the table where I started helping brands do the partnerships with influencers, because influencer marketing is a hot topic. Everyone knows about it. It's grown substantially, like over the last decade, even a little bit under, and it's growing substantially every year still. But there's still a lot of nuances. Like, a lot of people have no idea that there's a massive level of influencer fraud, or how to audit them the right way, or how to build really great relationships with them. Because when you think about advertising, you'll think maybe about traditional advertising or paid ads or social media ads. And that is, it has its similarities, but it is also very different in that you're dealing with people. And so in order to scale the organization or the affiliate program, whatever it may be, you really need to get good at building relationships with people and then being able to really audit the process across both sides so that it's a fit for both the company partnering with the influencer and the influencer that's partnering with the company. So there's just kind of like a lot of steps throughout that process to make sure you get it right, and making sure that things flow seamlessly, and then being able to scale that operation so that you have a lot of influencers on board over time, regardless of whatever it is that you're promoting.
I'm very curious as to, you know, what constitutes influencer fraud. I don't know if I've heard this. I mean, I've seen people promoting fraudulent products. Now there's a whole thing down here in Latin America. I don't know how popular it's in the US right now, but I'm seeing a lot of this like financial freedom kind of stuff. And it's like, I'll show you how to 3X your money in 3 days. And it's like, what the hell are you talking about? But what were you referring to?
What are you talking about? That's really funny. It's actually, you know what? They're somewhat related. So it's funny that you said that. I'm actually in Latin America too. So that's interesting. I had no idea you were there, Javier. But that's just a side note. So essentially, the entire influencer marketing fraud comes from two types of fraud. One is engagement fraud, and then the second one is just follower fraud, right? And so both of them originate from the same place where an influencer or a wannabe influencer is paying for bots to either up their engagement or up their level of following. And so a lot of this is coming from what you just mentioned, which is this kind of get rich quick scheme that has always been around and just kind of is, it's way more prevalent because of social media and all of that stuff, or at least we see it more. And so a lot of the times it looks like, here's this influencer, they have great numbers, their engagement rate is phenomenal, their following rate is really high. And then we run a campaign, let's say someone runs a campaign with them, not knowing really that these metrics are the back end of what's going on. And then you lose like 50%, 40%, 30% return on investment because half of their followers are fake or their engagement is almost completely fake. And so many big brands run branding campaigns with influencer marketing, right? And it's more used throughout with bigger brands. It's still used with medium and smaller sized brands, but typically their goal is lead generation because they're more revenue right away, whereas larger brands run brand campaigns. And so when you run a brand campaign, you don't really know when you look at the numbers that there's fraud going on. So let's say I run a brand campaign with X company. It looks like there were tons of people who went on the website or the landing page or whatever it might have been. It looks like engagement was really high. It looks like the post did incredibly well. And then if you look on the back end of that, you see, okay, 40% were fake or bots. And so that's where you need to be really careful, because now you're seeing an upside down return on what you had spent.
I have a very random follow-up here, but I'm just very curious because you seem to understand this. And I kind of developed this kind of eye where it's like, okay, this person has 5 million followers, but 300 likes on a picture. This looks fishy. But I've seen something new where people are leveraging influencer names to get you on Phantom Podcast or something. And I've been getting a bunch of emails, like maybe 10 or 15 a week, saying, hey, we want you to be on this podcast. We'll pay you $2,000 or $4,000 for you to be on the show. This is a Joe Budden show, for instance, right? And I go and check out this guy, and it's like, okay, this guy has 10 million followers. But then the person who's sending the email is a Gmail address. And I've been getting a bunch of these.
Wait, so they're leveraging, like they're saying, hey, we're going to get you on this really massive podcast.
And we'll pay you for it.
Oh, yeah. You know what? That has not happened to me before. But it's obviously some kind of scheme, and I don't know what's behind it, to be honest. That one hasn't happened to me yet.
I think a quick follow-up to that is, like, how do you navigate that? How are you finding genuine influencers who get that engagement for you that you could trust are going to be a good investment?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And this is really important for any brand that wants to run influencer marketing to know these numbers and what to look for, right? I think a lot of people don't even know it exists. And then it's like, well now that I know it exists, what do I do to make sure that doesn't happen to me? So it's actually relatively simple. It's kind of like what you just said, Javier. So let's say, for example, that you have an influencer and they have, forget their followers for a second. Let's just say that one post has 3,000 likes, the next post has 3,000 likes, and then like two posts before that had like 50 likes, right? So that immediately is like red flags, like bouncing off. So it's like that is impossible. That will not happen, right? And so that's one of them, is just measuring the consistency or inconsistency of their engagement throughout and what that looks like. If they have, and you can kind of see through the back end using different tools, what their engagement looks like over a period of time. So if you see on the graph, it all of a sudden went up for no particular reason. There wasn't any kind of like massive media they got. There wasn't anything that gave them a lot of attention to do that. You know, that's probably, they're probably running some level of engagement fraud. In terms of influencer fraud, there are a lot of tools out there right now that just measure that, right? And I'll just give you an example of one. There's one called, there's tons, but there's one called modash.io. And they have even a free influencer fraudulent checker that you can just go in there, put in someone's handle, and they can tell you immediately just off of doing some AI measurements and their engagement rate and the increase in their following over time and what that looked like. So they take all of these into calculation and they say, you know, this person has a 40% fake following, 50% fake following. It is really important to note this one thing though, and that's that any influencer who has an open account is going to have a percentage of a fake following. So I don't know if you guys have an open account or have. I do. I have an open account. I get weird followers all the time, like from accounts that like aren't real, that don't exist, that, you know, like just very, very odd people. But it's not real accounts, right? And so that happens. So we'll say typically between 20 to 25% of a fake following is okay. Anything above that, you really just don't want to be touching. And that's kind of the standards we go by. And we really try to keep it even below that at around 15%, unless like the client is just like so hyper, hyper niche where it's like really hard to find their audience. But aside from that, there should be no reason to be working with influencers that at least they're above 20 to 25% of a fake following.
And you know, the cannabis world is relatively small, especially when it comes to influencers, right? There's a limited number of people who really have that kind of reach and are not getting, you know, deleted off Instagram, for instance, right? So like, why would I not go directly to this influencer? Like, why do I need influencer management to manage that relationship instead of, I don't know, like DM and call a puffs and going, hey, you know, I want to do this campaign?
Yes. Okay. So that's a great question too. So the short answer is you don't. You can directly go to the influencer yourself, but it's like anything else that you do in business. It's like any other vendor that you hire in business. So I can do my own PR, right? Like I can go message journalists, build those relationships, speak with them, do a bunch of pitches, learn how to pitch right so that I'm more likely to get more PR hits, that kind of a thing. But it's taking up a lot of time and skill, learning how to do it, learning how to do it right, learning where I made a mistake, where I didn't. And it takes a lot of financial investment if you're a smaller company and maybe you hired someone to do some of the outreach for you or whatever it might be. You might not know what negotiation rates look like, all this different stuff. So if we bring it back to influencer marketing, it's the same thing. You absolutely can do it yourself. It's just that there's going to be a massive learning curve. And the massive learning curve is going to be, okay, how do I find out who's the fraudulent influencers? What metrics do I look for? What type of influencers do I want to partner with? How do I do outreach in a way that isn't annoying and creepy and doesn't seem like they just sent out 1,000 messages, because I get those emails every single day. You know, hashtag random code Safari Sarah partnership. Like heart face, like, you know, it's I'm like memorize the way that they do it. Right. And so there's just so many nuances, like I said at the beginning, and components that will make her a good or bad campaign. The other thing is, like, how do you want the strategy to even look? So a lot of times we'll have, you know, a brand and they run one campaign for a brand, and then you'll see this really massive peak in engagement, in following, potentially in sales and what that looks like. And then boom, it crashes back down. So how do you keep that consistency where, you know, that's front of mind for people who are using influencer marketing for whatever brand that they're promoting, and you're able to see that grow over time? So it's just kind of like the hitter takes, like, do you want to pay for experts to do this for you, save time, money, and just kind of a big learning curve? Or do you want to go through that and learn it yourself and figure it out and then hire a team to do it? It's kind of like pros and cons to both, for sure.
I kind of wanted to dive in, and not to be like US centric at all, but there are definitely some states that are legalizing and that gives more opportunity for products to be made there, like New York, expanding their cannabis markets. I guess I want to ask, like, does this present a new opportunity for Influencer Nexus to work for more companies, or how are you guys navigating that?
Yeah. So the idea, and we all know this, but like different social media platforms, they're all saying something similar, which is, you know, cannabis advocacy and educational pages are okay as long as they're not directly promoting any sale of a product. And so today, that's where we're at. If that will change, I personally think that it will, just because of the change in legalization and states starting to become more liberal with it, and we're seeing dispensaries increase throughout the country and all of this kind of stuff. I think that will change in time. How long, I have absolutely no idea. But that's where the difficulty does still come in when it comes to cannabis. It's like, you can do that influencer outreach, but you have to be very, very particular. One, in how they promote. And then the influencer themselves might be a little bit hesitant because of what they know as to be, you know, this, I'm afraid this might, you know, tamper my page, or what if they take it down, all that kind of stuff. So you, as of right now, you do have to tread very carefully in how you do it. It doesn't mean that you can't do it, but you have to follow like really particular guidelines to make sure that you're in the safe zone when you're kind of promoting.
I will bring up a personal example for this, you know, just like to prove out a theory, right? Like, so Benzinga has a sister publication in Latin America called El Bandeo. We had until last week an account that had 5 million impressions a month, right, on Instagram. Whenever we had a peak in engagement, it would get closed, right? I don't know if it's because Instagram thinks it's bots or whatever, but whenever we had a hit post, instantly closed. How do you manage that kind of situation when you have an influencer doing a campaign for you that will instantly translate to a peak in engagement, right? For a type of page that is already flagged, right? In our case, we're a media outlet. We're not selling any weed. We're not selling any drugs, but that is what they argue. You know, we reviewed your account. You're clearly selling drugs and you're paying for the engagement. This is all wrong for us, right? So, like, how do you manage that like jump in engagement when you do an influencer campaign for a cannabis brand?
Yeah, I wish there was like a really easy, like, turnkey answer for this.
No, there isn't.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, there really isn't. The best that you can absolutely do is follow their guidelines of maintaining it as an advocacy or educational page and make sure that the influencer is doing the same thing. And you're right, even then there could be something that happens if there's a peak in engagement, in which case you would have to provide proof of like X, Y, and Z that shows that this isn't the case. And in most cases, I've seen the page go back up, but it is this dance of like page goes down, page goes back up, page goes down, page goes back up as it stands right now.
It seems like influencer marketing, and I would say the cannabis industry, is like a roller coaster. I mean, it's hard to really predict where it's going to go either. I kind of wanted to talk about trends that you kind of have seen with that while navigating. Do you see influencers even kind of testing that, wanting to go in that direction? Are those like scary waters for them? They're kind of jumping back from that industry. What are you kind of seeing?
Yeah, I think like from the influencers within the niche, it's like a 50-50. Some influencers are scared because let's say they have hundreds of thousands of followers, or even like micro influencers, you'll get this as at times as well, because they just don't want to take the risk for whatever it might be, whether it's, you know, a one-time $1,000 deal, $500, whatever it might be, to have their page potentially taken down. And there's like a lot of also scare tactics out there that kind of bring a little bit of fear into the way. But there's also influencers who are like, yeah, this is cool, I'm going to follow the guidelines and I'll still post. It just really depends also on the influencer's experience. So there have been times where an influencer has posted something cannabis related and they've had problems, or the page was temporarily taken down again and it came back up. And typically those influencers are a little bit more timid or hesitant to redo it. But influencers who potentially maybe haven't before, or they have and there's been great results from it, are more willing to redo it again. It's very experience based.
You know, to close it up a little bit, you know, when we think of influencer marketing, I think many of us tend to think Instagram or maybe TikTok, but those are the two least cannabis friendly platforms out there for sure. You know, which other platforms have you seen success in, and how are these campaigns different, right? We know for cannabis brands, of course, but how are these campaigns different from the classic influencer marketing that we think of when we think about Instagram or TikTok, where it's like someone famous talking about your product or doing a video showcasing your product or your brand?
Yeah. So, I mean, when we're talking about influencer marketing as a whole, it's going to be on Instagram, it's going to be on Facebook, it's going to be on TikTok, it's going to be on Twitter, and it's going to be on LinkedIn. Twitter and LinkedIn, we can take it out for now because it's mostly B2B influencer marketing. And B2B influencer marketing is completely different than B2C influencer marketing. The strategies for it are very, very different because the people who are B2B influencers are very, very different. So if we kind of narrow that down, and Facebook and Instagram are the same, obviously. So now we have YouTube, which is the only other one that's out there. And so YouTube still has very similar policies that are based off of, you know, you want to make sure that it's educational, you want to make sure that you're not selling any, all this kind of stuff. And so you can absolutely still follow what works for any other type of product with these products as well. However, you still are running the risk of it getting shut down to this similar degree, if it's not the same, as those other two platforms. So it is very popular, YouTube, and running different campaigns for B2C brands. You absolutely can with cannabis as well, but you are still running the risk of it potentially being taken down. Well, I feel like I'm just giving all this terrible news.
It's honest. We want an inside look of what's happening. I think that wraps up today, but I wanted to ask, where can people contact you, find you, kind of learn more about Influencer Nexus?
Yeah, sure. So if anybody wants to reach out, we can just do it on LinkedIn. It's first name, last name. So Sarah with an H, and Safari, like you're going on a safari, but two Fs.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate you on, and hopefully we will keep an eye out for some big moves from you here in the future.
Amazing. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, that's a wrap for today's Cannabis Insider. Before we go, I want to remind you to stay tuned for all of Benzinga's content we put out on daily. Especially look out for our upcoming events, though, from our highly anticipated Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference in April to our Deep Dive virtual events, one of which we have this week on the 18th. So for more information on how to get involved, check out benzinga.com/events.
Come join us. We'll be in Florida again. We're also coming to California for the first time ever, with a new spinoff from our, you know, beloved classic Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conferences. It's the Cannabis Market Spotlight. We're starting in California, in Los Angeles, more specifically in Culver City on February 22nd. Go to cannabismarketspotlight.com for more information. And again, bccannabis.com. Come join us in Florida. You know, that is a can't miss event. Talk to any of your friends in the cannabis industry. They will tell you that is the place to be, come see us. Come say hi. You won't see me here twice a week, every week. So you got to come say hi. Give me a hug. And why not close some deals, raise some capital, find your next partner, learn from the leading voices in the industry. Can't miss.
Exactly. And so until next time, stay green, stay informed, and we will catch you later.